It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, I'll talk with Shelley Buffalo. She's a member of the Meskwaki tribe and the founder of the Jingle Dress Society, a new group designed to empower Native people in Iowa, to give them a voice and a way to share and celebrate their culture. I will talk with her later on. But first, many of us have been listening to Maureen Corrigan's advice for decades. She's been the book reviewer for NPR's Fresh Air for more than 20 years. She is literary critic for The Washington Post and the Jamie and Nikki Grant Distinguished Professor of the Practice of Literary Criticism at Georgetown University. She's going to be in Iowa this week. She'll be speaking at the Des Moines Public Library on Saturday, April 22nd from 4 to 5 as part of the AVID series. She'll be speaking at the Iowa City Public Library on Sunday, April 23rd from 6 to 7 with a reception following. That's part of the Iowa City Public Library's Looking Forward annual fundraiser, and she is on the line with me now. Hello, Maureen.
Hello. It's great to be on the line, and congratulations on getting that mouthful of an academic title I have out.
I almost made it all the way through. Well, I know that when people meet you, probably the first thing they ask you is, how many books do you read? So I'm just going to start there. How many books do you read every year?
Oh, my gosh, as many as I can cram in. Obviously, I'm reading for Fresh Air every week. I do a review a week for Fresh Air. I review a couple of books a month for the Washington Post. I'm reading for the courses I teach at Georgetown. I'm reading for pleasure. I receive at least 200 new books a week delivered to my front porch in Washington, D.C., sent there by publishers hoping to get a review on Fresh Air. So if you love books, my house is like the candy store for book lovers, and my jobs are the best jobs I can imagine for someone who loves books.
So how many hours a week do you think you spend reading?
Numbers. You know, it really... any free time that I have when I'm not walking the dog or listening to my 18-year-old daughter's latest life crisis or, you know, wondering about what we're going to have for dinner, those are hours that are devoted to reading. I feel like I always have my nose in a book. So I would say I read early in the morning. I love to get up early and have that quiet time to really dig into books. So a couple of hours every morning, and then certainly after, you know, teaching or whatever, the work of the day is over, I'm reading probably about 4 hours every night.
How do you decide what books you're going to review? Because, I mean, with hundreds of books to choose from every week, that must be a really difficult process.
It is and it isn't. You know, my producer at Fresh Air, Phyllis Myers, and I make up a list about 4 months ahead of time of titles culled from publishing catalogs and also Publishers Weekly, which is the magazine of the publishing profession, so that we know what's coming out in the next season. And then we'll check in with Terry Gross and see, well, is she interviewing that author? And if she is, I'll move on to other titles, because there's so much that comes out that we tend not to want to duplicate each other in terms of the light that we shine on different books. So I have a list based on, well, authors who I love, who I know they have another book coming out. Or if it's nonfiction, if it's a topic that sounds really interesting. A couple of years ago, for instance, I did a nonfiction book about a dog. I love dogs, and believe me, I get tons of dog books every week. It's such a popular topic. But this was it was called No Better Friend, and it was about a dog that had actually been in a Japanese internment camp during World War II. And, you know, that was such an interesting story about this dog that had survived. It wasn't an internment camp, I should say a prisoner of war camp. The dog had survived that camp that, you know, I was pulled in, even though I've said repeatedly, no more dog books. sometimes, though, you know, we change things week to week on Fresh Air. I think that's honestly part of the beauty of the show, that sometimes I'm scrambling because maybe a book or two books that I thought were definites for my review, maybe they turned out to be just okay or a little stale, and then I'll move on to something else. And really, sometimes I will open up books and be surprised. I remember Angela's Ashes by Frank McCourt years ago. I hadn't heard of that memoir before it came out, and I was so taken by the photograph on the cover of that book that I decided to give it a read. And, you know, within 30 pages, I was just drawn in. Sometimes people will write to me, and years ago, I received two books by a woman who said, "My mother wrote these books. I hope you'll take a look." And one of them turned out to be a memoir called Searching for Tamsin Donner, written by a woman named Gabrielle Burton, who just passed away last year. It's an amazing memoir about Gabrielle's own search to find out more about Tamsin Donner, the wife of the head of the doomed Donner Party. And just so compelling. Again, I had never heard of this memoir. It was published, I think, by the University of Nebraska Press, and her daughter brought it to my attention. So I find books in all sorts of ways.
When you dip into a book to see if it's something that you want to review, what's the criteria? Because, I mean, most of the reviews that you share are positive, but do you have to like the book or love the book to do a review?
I don't have to like it or love it to do a review. What I would say is, if I'm going to do a negative review, the author has to already have enough of a reputation that people will be interested in hearing that this latest book isn't good. I won't do a negative review of a debut novel unless it's received so much hype that people will be interested in knowing that the book, in my opinion, isn't that good. Because most debut novelists are unknown, so there's no point in doing that negative review. But I do negative reviews sometimes. I think they're important because, you know, I'm not a publicist. I'm someone who's telling you my critical evaluation of a book. So I will do negative reviews. And I know Grace Paley has a posthumous collection of her essays and short stories are just out. Years ago, I did a negative review of Grace Paley's memoir. And then the next month, I found myself taking a walk on the Brooklyn Bridge in the company of a lot of poets, including Grace Paley. And I remember spending that whole walk across the Brooklyn Bridge trying to avoid being introduced to Grace Paley because I really admired her. It was just this memoir wasn't up to her usual standards. I really try to look for something authentic in a book, especially if I am coming to it cold, if I don't know the author. I'll give a book about 50 pages, but if there's not something really striking, genuine, real, authentic about the voice of the narrator or the situation of the novel, especially if it's a fiction book, or, you know, just something, the setting, then I'll put it aside. If it feels canned, if it feels like the 4,000th precious literary novel that I've gotten about a marriage falling apart, then I will put it aside.
How long do you give a book before you give up?
About 50 pages. If it's really terrible, I'll probably end sooner than that. You know, if it's, and some books, I have to say, perhaps it's not fair, but I tend to discount right away as soon as I take them out of the mailer. The mailer that the book comes in. If it's yet another vampire story, if it's yet another story these days about a little-known member of the British royal family, I feel like there's this Downton Abbey effect that I'm still living with, where so many nonfiction biographies and histories that I'm getting right now have to do with someone you've never heard of who was related to Queen Victoria through some circuitous route. I feel like those kinds of books are just cashing in, and they don't really come out of a place of genuine passion. They come out of a desire simply to make money.
I have read books where I feel like they're extremely well written and, you know, the craft is being practiced well, but it doesn't speak to me personally. Mm-hmm. So as a literary critic, how do you weigh that? I mean, do you have to, like I said, do you have to like it in addition to respecting it?
I think that's where the hard work, but maybe the most important work of being a critic actually comes in. We can all go on Goodreads or Amazon and see whether people liked a book or not. But to take that next step, and for me, it's, you know, honestly, the Elena Ferrante books, the Neapolitan Quartet, I didn't like every one of those books, but I thought they were really well written and really interesting. Some books, you know, don't particularly speak to me in terms of my racial, socioeconomic class, you know, gender identity. But I am interested in going into those other worlds. And if an author is good enough, if they're adept enough at the craft of writing, and if their imagination is strong enough, they will pull me in. So you're right. It's not always about liking a book, but it's about, for me as a critic, it's about taking a book on its own terms and seeing whether it does, whether it delivers on what it set out to do. And that's really how I'm judging the book, more than, you know, it's great when I love a book, when I, you know, can enthusiastically say, the hours sped by as I read this book. But that doesn't always happen, and that doesn't mean that the book is deformed in some way.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking to literary critic Maureen Corrigan. She is the book reviewer for NPR's Fresh Air. We'll continue in a moment. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. My guest right now is Maureen Corrigan. She's been the book reviewer for NPR's Fresh Air for more than 20 years. She's the literary critic for The Washington Post and a distinguished professor at Georgetown University. She's going to be in Iowa this week in Des Moines on Saturday, April 22nd, speaking from 4 to 5 as part of the AVID series at the Des Moines Public Library. She'll be at the Iowa City Public Library on Sunday, April 23rd. As part of the Iowa City Public Library's Looking Forward fundraiser. And, of course, she is with me now. You're welcome to join the conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And, Maureen, when we were first talking about how much you read, you mentioned that you're also still reading for pleasure. How is that different from reading for work? Does that change the process for you?
The only way it's different, because I'm lucky enough to be one of those people who, you know, does what she loves for a living, the only way it's different is that I'm not taking notes constantly. I either take notes on legal pad as I'm reading, or else I'm sticking Post-it notes into the books that I'm reading so that I can take notes later on. When I'm reading for pleasure, I am just going with the flow and not stopping and thinking about, oh, that's a sentence I'll want to focus on in the review because it's so beautifully written or something like that.
When you read for pleasure, is it mostly new books?
Honestly, when I read for pleasure, it's usually books that I've want to catch up with, books that for one reason or another I didn't manage to read the first time around when they first came out, and I've heard such great things about them that I really want to go back. Right now I'm reading a book called Everyone Brave is Forgiven about World War II that a few people recommend it to me. It's a novel, and it's wonderful, but I I hadn't read it. All the Light We Cannot See by Anthony Doerr, I didn't get to the first time around, so I just finished that fairly recently. So that's usually my pleasure reading.
Do you ever go back and reread books?
Oh, my God, yes. of course, that's the gift of being a teacher, is that I'm always cleverly assigning books that I want to go back and reread. And, of course, for me, the number one book that I have reread, I'd say by now about 100 times, is The Great Gatsby by F. Scott Fitzgerald. I think it is the greatest American novel, and it's a book that I always find something new in every time I reread, whether through the help of my students or something that I noticed. I think that's the mark of a great work of art. It always gives you something new.
I think a lot of people, when they pick up a book, they may not get hooked right away and then may feel a little overwhelmed or intimidated by pressing on. Do you have advice for people for how to get engaged in a book? Because not everybody is an enthusiastic reader.
Yeah, it's true. And honestly, maybe then sometimes folks should just put that book aside and go on to something else. I don't feel like, I don't think that reading should be a duty. I think it should be a pleasure. I do think you're right, though. Of course, some books take more effort to get into. And if you're going to open up War and Peace, you know, if you're going to open up Proust, you may not get hooked in the first 100 pages or so. I feel like for me, when I encounter those books, and they're usually the classics, I really try to have some humility and to think to myself, well, there have been generations of critics of readers who've assured me, for instance, that Middlemarch by George Eliot is the greatest Victorian novel ever written. I don't happen to like Middlemarch, but I've pressed through it 3 times now, trying to find what other people find in it.
And did you find it? Because I quit after about 100 pages.
I feel like now that I've read it 3 times, I have enough personal experience with that novel to say, I think they're wrong. I think Dickens, the Brontes, of course, Jane Austen earlier in the 19th century, they have Eliot beat by a mile. I think she was a better essay writer than she was a novelist.
Well, it just made me feel a lot better.
Yeah.
So what are some of the books that have really stuck out for you in recent years? I mean, I think a lot of us who love to read are always playing catch up because there's never enough time. But what are a couple maybe in the last 3 or 4 years that we really do need to go back and find?
Oh, gosh. Well, I have to put in a plug for the 3 novels that I nominated along with my 2 fellow jurors for the 2012 Pulitzer Prize. And that was the year that the Pulitzer Committee, the Pulitzer Board, I should say, decided not to award the Pulitzer Prize. It's this really contorted process by which the Pulitzer is awarded. But I would recommend that everybody read Dennis Johnson's novella called Train Dreams. It's set in the West. It's about the turn of the last century, a man out in the West, pretty much living alone. And the landscape descriptions, the challenges that he faces, and Dennis Johnson's writing is just unearthly. It's short, it's about 100 pages, and it's, I think, another great American novel. Karen Russell's Swamplandia was a wonderful sort of American tall tale novel set in Florida that that I loved and my other 2 committee members loved. And then a little bit more of a reach, a little bit more effort, but David Foster Wallace's posthumous novel, Pale King, is, I think, an extraordinary novel, especially about work in America. So those are 3. I always recommend that people read Stuart Onan's, another novella, short novel, Last Night at the Lobster. It is an amazing short novel about a Red Lobster restaurant closing, and it's seen through the eyes of the manager, and what it's like to close up that restaurant, to lose that work family, and to sort of be set adrift in America. I think that's an amazing novel that I wish everybody would read. I think Underground Railroad, which won the Pulitzer this year, is an extraordinary novel, and by Colson Whitehead, and that was my book of the year last year, my novel of the year. So those are three, four. I've lost track. That I'll recommend.
When you talk to people, I'm sure you hear this all the time, because I think we all hear it. People say, oh, I wish I could read. I just don't have enough time to read. I mean, clearly you have kind of built your life about reading. But when you hear people say that, what's your response?
Yeah, I'm going to make some enemies now. My response is, I know people have tougher jobs than I have. You know, I know people have jobs that are physically demanding. I grew up in a blue-collar household. My dad had that kind of a job. But I do think you make choices with your free time. And a lot of people I know who say to me, oh, my God, I wish I could read, but I don't have any time. I know they're going home after a hard day's work, and they're choosing to watch Netflix or Dancing with the Stars or whatever they watch. It's fine. But just to be aware that that's a choice. I do think that all of us have some time that's our own time, if we're lucky, and we make a choice what to do with that time. So you do have time to read, but you're choosing to do something else with that time, and that's your choice. I don't buy the argument that most people give me of, I don't have time to read.
I'm talking with Maureen Corrigan. She is a book critic. She's been the book reviewer for NPR's Fresh Air for more than 20 years. And so, Maureen, you know, if people are making the choice not to read, make a case for making the other choice. Why do you think reading is important in this day and age? What does it give us that we can't get in another way?
I think when I know that when I tune into Netflix or turn on TV or, you know, even go to the movies, a lot of times I'm looking for relaxation, and relaxation means what I'm watching doesn't demand much of me. And it a lot of times it's sort of almost affirming my own situation or my own likes and dislikes. Like when I want to kick back, sometimes I'll rewatch Midnight in Paris, Woody Allen's movie about, you know, time travel, about Owen Wilson going back to the Paris of the 1920s and meeting Hemingway and Fitzgerald. Well, I love that period, so I want to go back there again and again and again. I think that reading really can offer you the unexpected. It can take you out of your box. It certainly does that for me. When I read Colson Whitehead's Underground Railroad, which, by the way, is funny and vivid and lively, it's not a call to duty. It's also a call to pleasure. Even though the subject is slavery and it does have some really horrific scenes, I am taken out of my own situation. I'm expanded. I go into someone else's world in a way that I don't often feel that I do when I simply, am watching the latest reality show on TV.
You mentioned your 18-year-old daughter earlier, and I have learned that she is not a bookworm.
She's not. It's a great life failure. I know. she reads, and she has some of her favorite authors. But I think because she tagged along with me for so many years, going to book festivals and talks, people would always say to her, are you a big reader like your mother? So, of course, probably in psychological defense, she's become she loves math and science. She really, and the other thing about my daughter is, unlike me, she's very social. And she really loves to talk to people and to go. She has no social anxiety about walking into a party or a crowd. And I think, a lot of us bookworms, we like to be alone, which isn't to say I'm not looking forward to meeting everybody in Iowa. But, you know, as I said, the first sentence of my memoir, my memoir is entitled Leave Me Alone, I'm Reading. I guess that lets you
that
know
sums
how
it up
I feel.
A little bit. But so to be a reader, you feel like you have to really enjoy being alone, that kind of solitude?
I think that's true. I mean, I hate to issue these blanket statements, but I definitely think it can't bother you to be alone, because really you're sitting in your favorite chair or wherever you're sitting when you're reading, and it's you and the book, and the rest of the world is closed out. So I think you have to enjoy that feeling.
I think that audiobooks have become more and more popular, and I mean, it seems to be on an incredible trajectory. The number of people who really enjoy digging into an audiobook, and the production values have gotten a lot better for an audio snob like me. How do you feel about audiobooks? Do you feel like that's reading?
It's a different kind of reading. I think audiobooks definitely take us back to that earliest experience of listening to a story. You know, if we were lucky, having our parents tell us a story. So they really have that. I think when I listen to them and they're done well, they have that kind of hypnotic quality. I don't listen to them very often, though, because I also feel like, especially with reviewing, of course, I'm looking for how the sentences, the paragraphs, the chapters are crafted. And it would be much harder, I think, to get a sense of the craft of how a story is put together just listening to the book.
So it sounds like you're not personally a fan.
I don't listen to them that often. Yeah, but then again, if you had 200 free books delivered to your door every week, wouldn't you read those? You know, I mean, that's what
Well, listening to an audiobook is much slower.
Yeah, it's much slower, and I guess the one thing I don't like about audiobooks, you know, this is not dependent on whether I'm reviewing the book, I don't like somebody else's interpretation standing between me and the book. I like to hear the voice of the book in my head. So I kind of resist having the book performed for me.
Interesting. And do you like to read out loud yourself?
I love to read certain books out loud. I love to read Gatsby out loud because it's such a pleasure to hear the many tones of that novel and to notice the word placement. I don't know if people love to hear me read out loud. You know, of course, one of the downsides of being on radio is that not only do you get wonderful emails from your listeners, you also get complaints. So certainly over the, whatever it's been, 27 years I've been on Fresh Air, I've gotten my share of complaints about people who tell me they can't stand my voice. So I'm aware of that.
Now, teaching young people, college students, literary criticism, I can imagine a lot of pitfalls. I mean, I remember being quite the literary snob when I was going into college, and, you know, getting exposed to all kinds of new things, of course, really broadens your horizons and changes your thinking. Is that a challenge with your students, helping them break out of this idea of what they think a literary critic should be?
Yeah, it is. It is a challenge. I would say today that the challenge for me as an English professor at Georgetown is to try to push back a bit against the prevalence of identity politics. And we talk about this a lot in my classes, that, you know, the notion that because, you know, in my case, I'm a white woman, that somehow I should not be entering into, you know, novel, that I'm somehow not as well equipped to read something like Colson Whitehead's Underground Railroad, which is, you know, Colson Whitehead is an author of color, and he's writing about the African-American experience of slavery. My argument, of course, against that is that I'm exactly the person who should be reading that book to have my awareness and sensibility enlarged. I hear a lot, you know, from my students that they really kind of are gravitating only to books written by authors who look like them. And I push back against that idea.
Well, Maureen Corrigan, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Oh, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Maureen Corrigan has been a book reviewer for NPR's Fresh Air for 27 years. She's literary critic for The Washington Post and a distinguished professor at Georgetown University. She's going to be in Iowa this coming weekend on Saturday in Des Moines, Sunday in Iowa City. This is Talk of Iowa.